Very big week for Joe Biden, because not only is this his first trip outside the United States since becoming president, he's also going to go from here to Brussels to the NATO summit, and then he's going to indulge in a prize fight with Vladimir Putin, the man that he called a killer, as we just heard in that interview with Leon Panetta, in Geneva on Wednesday. So, lots to discuss for Simon Marks, getting up as we speak in Washington this morning. Simon, LBC's Washington correspondent. Good to speak to you. Missing you here. You should be here in Cornwall.
I should be there. Every time I see these gorgeous seascapes, even through the mist, a little bit of me dies inside, Matt.
Oh. Well, we'll try and resurrect you. So from here, obviously, you know, we're all consumed here with, you know, the news of possibly not opening up on the 21st of June and Boris Johnson's photo opportunities with Carrie Johnson and baby Wilfred on the beach, etc., etc. Mm. And by the way, that Johnson hair goes perfectly well with the golden sands, you know, of Cornwall. But enough about that. How are they viewing the whole thing on your side of the pond?
Well, they are definitely viewing it. There's no question about that. Every time there is a glimpse of President Biden in one of these pulled photo opportunities, the news channels here break into it. I think they've been slightly harmed, the 24-hour news channels, by the fact that we haven't actually seen or heard that much from President Biden. I mean, we obviously saw the arrival at Mildenhall Air Force Base. We heard the stirring address to the service personnel there, in which he insisted that this is all about building a coalition of democracies to win the battle for the 21st century, show that democracy still has something to give to the rest of the world. And then, of course, he built on that on Thursday with the announcement that the United States is leading the way in terms of acquiring half a billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines to send out to low and middle income countries. But we've heard very little from him since then. I think that for the most part, he's been behind closed doors, holding these first face-to-face meetings with many of the G7 leaders. I mean, a couple of them had traipsed to Washington ahead of this summit, but for the most part, these are the first face-to-face contacts that he's had as president, although, as the White House keeps reminding us, you know, you ask them, is he ready for his interview meeting with Vladimir Putin? They say he's been preparing for this for 50 years, you know. No stranger on the world stage, and yet, as president, something of a stranger on the world stage.
Because, you know, Donald Trump, the previous president, couldn't stop talking, and this one doesn't talk enough. So what's going on there? I mean, is he not being wheeled out by his staff because they're afraid that he might lose his way or that he might choke on a few words? What's
happening? No, I don't think so. I think genuinely there are some substantive issues behind the scenes that various leaders at this summit want to talk to him about. And while the president wants to focus on this kind of big, sweeping, historical inflection point that he says the country is facing, the world is facing, between liberal democracy and autocracy, some of these European leaders have more parochial concerns. The French and others, many people in the UK, want to know why the United States is still closed to vaccinated travelers from across the Atlantic. I mean, Americans fully vaccinated can go and have a holiday this summer on the beaches of the south of France, but fully vaccinated French people can't head to Las Vegas. And you know the situation better than I do in terms of US-UK travel, still very, very complicated. The EU wants to press Joe Biden to drop steel and aluminium tariffs that Donald Trump imposed against them. The Germans want the White House to come up with a clear message on Nord Stream 2, that pipeline that's going to convey Vladimir Putin's natural gas to Europe. They feel as though the Biden administration is all over the map on Nord Stream 2, with the president recently indicating that he's kind of throwing in the towel because, well, the thing's already built, so what's the point in continuing to oppose it? And yet yesterday, his Secretary of State was threatening fresh sanctions against anyone who remains involved in it. So Angela Merkel is coming to Washington next month to try and unpick that particular knotty problem. I mean, there are all of these quite parochial issues that he's facing. Plus, of course, as we've talked about extensively on LBC, the intense desire of the United States to communicate to the British government that nothing is going to be tolerated that in any way threatens the future of the Good Friday Peace Agreement.
Is there a coherent Biden doctrine emerging out of all this?
Well, there's a coherent overarching message, which is that this is the last chance saloon for liberal democracies. And he says that winning the battle for the 21st century for primacy and influence is not an option for the United States, because if you don't win it, you lose to autocracies at a time when we know by 2028 China will have the world's largest economy. So the president is pressing G7 leaders, we hear here today, to include language in the statement that emanates from this summit that specifically calls out China for forced labor practices, for example, in Xinjiang and in other parts of the country. He's trying to present a situation where by the time he sits down with Vladimir Putin in Geneva on Wednesday, he's got a solid document behind him that says, right, G7, leaders of industrial democracies all over the world, EU, NATO, we are all united in saying to you, Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, here is the line in the sand. Not only must you not cross it, but also we're going to shore up our own economies. We're going to develop our own semiconductor industries, for example, as he's preparing to do here in the United States, to confront and combat Chinese primacy in that sector of the economy. Now, whether that's a doctrine, whether it's attainable and achievable is another question, but it's certainly the driving force behind him from a policy perspective.
As you put it on Air Force One on the way over, Europe, NATO and the US, we are tight with each other. Yes, so if yes. you are China or Russia and you're thinking about divide and rule, forget about it. You know, that's not going to happen. That's what the previous guy, Donald Trump, encouraged. So when it comes to Russia, especially Vladimir Putin, the prize fight in words, if not in fists, well, hopefully not in fists, on in Geneva on Wednesday. What can we expect there? And crucially, what's Vladimir Putin been telling American audiences?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be very combative. And Vladimir Putin, ever the master of the dark arts, is trying to mess Joe Biden's weekend up by giving an interview yesterday to NBC News in which he has this to say about the state of the American relationship, about the current American president, and tantalizingly, about his predecessor.
We have a bilateral relationship that has deteriorated to its lowest point in recent years. I believe that former U.S. President Mr. Trump is an extraordinary individual, talented individual. Otherwise, he would not have become U.S. president. But he didn't come from the U.S. establishment. He had not been part of big-time politics before. President Biden, of course, is radically different from Trump because President Biden is a career man. He has spent virtually his entire adulthood in politics.
Sounds there as though he's suggesting that, you know, with the very unconventional Donald Trump at the helm, there was a chance to improve the relationship. But now things have become even worse because you've got a careerist like Joe Biden running the show. He was asked whether he has had direct involvement in murder. Joe Biden has endorsed the view of Vladimir Putin that the Russian leader is a killer. There is no clearer yes or no answer to the question that he's asked by NBC's Keir Simmons in this interview. And yet, as you'll hear, it doesn't elicit a yes or no response.
Are you a killer?
Over my tenure, I've gotten used to attacks from all kinds of angles and from all kinds of areas under all kinds of pretext and reasons and of different caliber and fierceness, and none of it surprises me. So as far as harsh rhetoric, I think that this is an expression of overall U.S. culture.
I think we'll put that down as a definite maybe, shall we, Matt?
It reminds me of the time when Vladimir Putin invited one of his big dogs to a meeting with Angela Merkel, yes. who was famously, not very fond of dogs at all, and got the thing to growl at her.
Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, there's lots of questions left open by that interview, but there's also no doubt about the fact that he is bringing to Geneva a steely determination to push back against these efforts by Joe Biden and G7 leaders to say democracy is back, democracy can prevail. And we know now that that there's still an enormous back and forth going on between the White House and the Kremlin Kremlin over the way in which this summit is going to be held. We think there's going to be one big session with lots of people in the room, one small session, possibly with just the two presidents and their immediate advisers in the room. There is not going to be a joint press conference. That has now been decided. We know President Biden will speak to reporters after the meeting is over. We don't know if Vladimir Putin will or not, but they certainly won't do it together. And that's one early indication of the tonality of this meeting. They're clearly not going to be breaking bread and celebrating its breaking afterwards.
Simon, very briefly at the end, is Joe Biden going to try and get the other leaders here at the G7 summit to sign up to his renewed inquiry into the origins of the virus from Wuhan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's going to have to because he's under tremendous political pressure over that now, particularly from Republicans, but also from some Democrats. And also, I think there is genuine curiosity within the administration. There is now a growing belief that the Chinese certainly haven't been sufficiently transparent, and whether or not the lab was responsible for an accidental leak of what became COVID-19, they want to get to the bottom of it, and they're going to press China to be more transparent.
Indeed. Simon Marks, our Washington correspondent, thank you very much indeed for coming on the programme. After the break, we're going to speak to Lord Robin Rennick, former UK ambassador to the US, and we're going to be talking about sea shanties and hopefully hearing a couple.